Hey everyone, welcome. This week we are talking about The Rock, as you probably could tell from the title card. So I'll be brief about this. We're rejoined by a friend of the show, Michael Krause, who was on, I believe, last The Roadhouse episode, but has been on a couple times. Further, we're going to talk a little bit about, well, everyone's favorite Michael Bay movie, I assume. But on top of that, we should do a few plugs. If you're not listening to Mission Briefing, you should. It's just about wrapped up on this feed. However, if you just want us to talk Bond, we're going to. We're planning a run through of some of the video games, a ranking of the music, and a review of some of the Bond-like movies that have come before it. Additionally, I'm going to make a plug for Cineprov. I'm performing the incredible Two-Headed Transplant on September 7th. So you should tune in then, if you're in the metro area, of course. We're performing at the Plaza Hotel off Ponce. That's pretty much it. So this week on My Opie Finished Childhood, we see everyone's favorite unofficial Bond movie. This week we watched The Rock, starring Nick Cage and Sean Connery.
Previously on Podcasterole. Glomer is one of the most underrated cartoon characters of all time.
Some call Glomer the Jar Jar of the PBU, you know. I haven't stepped foot inside of a Subway since, really.
And neither is Jared.
It's true.
You're over at my home every week. Is there a meth lab here?
Not a big one.
I choose him, the one called Kirk. I'm freaking James T. Kirk.
Find out more about Podcasterole now on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Google Play. And don't forget AdamandJP.com and the ESO Network.
Welcome to My Beauty Vendor Childhood. This week, we review The Rock. You all right? Sorry, one or two panelists may or may not be masturbating right now. Well, let's get these rocks off. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor-in-chief of Dude Letter and host of My Beauty Vendor Childhood. On a panel this week, we have...
Scott.
And
Aaron
and
Scott.
Okay, second Scott. Well, Scott, I guess technically you're our defender, but I don't think anyone need to challenge how good this movie was.
Thought it was mediocre, to be honest. It's really kind of like a shit show. It was like a modern day Geely.
Them's fighting words.
You know, Geely is newer.
Geely
than this
is
movie.
Modern day.
I have no intelligent response to that.
I'm holding notes like a pleb. We're okay. We've got this. I put them down. My knockoff moleskin from a Walgreens, which I think I got when I was visiting you.
Whatever. What notes can you have for this movie? Like, Ed Harris, awesome. Sean Connery, badass.
Explosion
Cage,
for no reason.
Terrible.
Explosion.
Explosion.
Explosion. Nick Cage, Beatles. I'm a Beatles maniac. That's it.
Yeah.
I thought the movie was highly derivative.
Do tell.
I wrote at one point across the street. Okay, so before we get too far into this, Michael, would you like to try to give us a plot summary? I just want to see how this goes.
Yeah, so it's basically Michael Bay jerking off while reading Moby Dick in Alcatraz. That's it. That's all you need to know.
I'll give it a try. Yeah.
Wait. Thank you. What is Moby Dick?
Just go with it.
All right. Fine.
Ed Harris is the white whale.
Because he's a white guy?
Just go with it.
All right. Scott, why don't you give this a shot? Oh, sorry. Scott won.
Yeah.
Michael said he was Scott too.
Michael's just messed with our flow here.
Suck it, motherfucker.
Ed Harris is a retired brigadier general.
Very important man.
He has taken a group of disgruntled Marines and stolen VX nerve gas from a secret military facility. He has then taken said nerve gas, attached it to rockets, brought all of this stuff to Alcatraz, and hijacked a Alcatraz tour and taken all of the tourists.
What kind
hostages.
Of fucked up tour is this?
Indeed. And his ransom is some amount of money that will go to the families of military black ops soldiers who were killed and had no benefits paid out. This is quite a quandary because it's kind of a pretty good cause to be taking stupid tourists hostage for. So meanwhile, Nicolas Cage is a chemical weapons expert for the FBI, and they also enlist Sean Connery, who is a British Secret Service agent who's been out of action for 30 years, who is not James Bond, and who had also escaped from Alcatraz. So he knows more than blueprints and history and tour guides ever could tell them. So they take them along with Marines led by Michael Biehn to go infiltrate the place and save the day.
Well done.
I was going to say, that's a good plot summary. So you're let's welcome. Get into some of these characters. sorry, one of our co-hosts is kind of drunk. We got this. And it's not me this time. This is the greatest podcast I've ever done.
I'll cheers to that.
Yeah, this is fair.
I'll cheers to that.
Foley effect. Foley effect. Alcoholism. So
you should probably turn my mic down because I'm...
You don't think I haven't already?
It's completely off.
So, I mean, technically you're only being picked up by the other three mics around you, but you're fine.
That's fair.
Yeah. So we should talk a little bit about these characters. First, we have literally Sean Connery playing retired James Bond. He studied philosophy. He studied secret services and he's a military expert. And every time he starts quoting philosophy, he gets a gun to the back of the head because this ain't your mama's Bond movie, right?
I would argue he's better in a lot of ways than Bond.
Oh, I'm not against it.
Smarter, he's much more of a smart ass and he's not constantly drunk. But also, he's not wearing a tie. Why is Bond always wearing a tie?
Classy.
Please, yeah, like, Sean Connery's Bond at one point crouched over and painted himself in yellow face for your eyes only. So if we're thinking of Sean Connery's Bond from 30 years before, this is actually not a bad sequel to the end of his life.
Yeah, I like the theory that this is actually James Bond who's been locked away by MGM for 30 years and he's been broken out by Michael Bay.
She's had Barbara Broccoli put movie. A ball gag on her yeah. on him for the last 30 years.
Sure.
Better than the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen or whatever that bullshit was.
That movie sucked.
I'm John Quatermain. I shouldn't be in this piece of shit. But that's pretty much what we've got. We have Ed Harris, who has a rod so far up his ass he can't blink. I don't think anyone blinks in this movie. It's a cocaine trip the whole time.
Don't forget Carla, who won prom queen. That's important.
Do you want to give us a line, Michael? Do you think you have it?
Try.
Your best.
Your best.
Losers always
whine about their best. Winners go home and fuck the prom queen.
Carla was the prom queen.
Really?
Yeah.
Whackety smackety doo.
Oh my god.
Do you think that was improv? Like, I imagine Sean Connery calls people pricks and pansies all the time.
I'm sure no one knew what Nicolas Cage was going to do at any given moment.
I'm just going to throw this out there. This movie was, what, 96?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, why not?
So we're all 85 except for you. So we're all like 11 when this comes out.
Mm-hmm.
This movie was like the defining movie of our childhood.
Well, I was going to back this up. I'm the only one who doesn't have an older brother. Right. So I saw this at your house because someone convinced an older person to rent this movie. I'm 90% sure I saw this.
Probably Steve convincing himself to rent this movie.
Oh,
I saw this in the theaters. You see it in the theaters, Michael?
I don't remember.
I was lucky enough to have a dad guy. Who would bring home movies like this. So, yeah. I got to see all the good ones. Every Steven Seagal. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jean-Claude. Oh, my God. Who, by the way, is no longer being allowed in...
Ukraine.
The Ukraine? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
He's declared a weapon of Ukraine.
Ukraine knows what's going on.
Was there a big demand for Steven Seagal in the Ukraine?
Obviously.
Well, no, he's been made a Russian citizen. He's good pals with Putin.
Oh. Everybody is nowadays.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think Seagal has stood up in the last 3 years. All of his fight scenes are from a chair. Now?
I will say, if you go on, I think it's Netflix and look up Steven Seagal movies, every single one of the movies is made in either 2016, 2015, or 2017.
Oh, he's made a thousand movies.
There's like 14 movies. Like, they're all amazingly bad. Which, not to say don't watch them. You should totally watch them. They're just amazingly bad.
Don't expect a plot or hope for humanity, but, you know, Seagal's just a fat guy with who's convinced he's a doll, one of the dead llamas reincarnated, right?
In one of the movies we watch, he's supposed to be a Japanese guy.
Oh,
think about that.
I've made this joke before. I've made this joke before, but him and Keanu Reeves should do a father-son pic called Vaguely Asian. They can both talk about doing kung fu and not really know what's going on.
Whoa.
Although one of them saved their career in the last 3 years and one did not.
Yep.
John Wick is so fucking good. God, it's a good movie.
What are we talking about?
The Rock.
Oh, right.
Someone has to get their rocks off. Let's do this.
Ed Harris.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Ed Harris, man. Ed Harris is fucking classy.
Is he not the best in everything he ever does? So Ed Harris, national treasure. Good in everything he's in. Mm. But I dug him in this, and I dig his character because he's one of those villains that you root for, sort of like Magneto, where you can kind of get behind what they're saying, really. So I really dug this about him. And he's, by the end, we find out he's not the real bad guy. He gets betrayed.
He's like the Bernie Marcus of the military.
I wouldn't say so. No.
For our non-Jewish listeners, Bernie Marcus.
Just don't even touch it.
Owns Atlanta. I have nothing to add to that. So we should keep going. Nick Cage is someone who started out by not doing cocaine and then ended the movie on all the cocaine.
So I have to just say, like, this movie has so many complete non sequiturs about character development. Like, yep. Why do we know or care that Nick Cage buys a $600 Beatles record at the beginning? Like, what does that add to the movie?
I have no idea.
Perhaps a failed attempt at investiture in the character. Like, you want to care if he lives or dies. And so you need to know something about him. So Beatles maniac makes him
who relates
lovable.
To that? Not the Beatles maniac part. The I have that much expendable income part.
I was going to say,
yeah, here,
here's how I would do it. If I had done it, which I didn't do it, like O.J. Simpson, what I would have done is have the radio playing a Stones song, him demand that they change the station to a Beatles song, because the intro.
Which song?
Miss You to Hold Your Hand. It's a perfect dynamic. Okay.
Yeah.
But because
damn, son.
Because yeah. The introduction right to the character is
good.
Them with the Nerf gun that catches a hula girl on fire to the thing. Like, that's already the nerdy intro. Why do you have to have another step?
Yeah.
Right?
I wish I had that in my office. Goddamn.
I mean, it's practically like an OK Go, like music video, but it's just the intro before they have to like do more blow and then go to the next scene where he disarms a bomb for no reason.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because OK Go music video by Michael Bay would be unbelievable.
None of them would survive.
Yeah, but fuck it. Like, they're not that good. They just make cool music videos. The music kind of sucks. Just throwing that out there.
I don't disagree, but they, not unlike Beastie Boys, need a Criterion music video collection.
Mm.
Although, I have a question. Who goes first? Them or, well, actually, them, Fatboy Slim, or Weird Al? I think Weird Al gets the Criterion box next, frankly. But
That would be good.
They're definitely last of that three.
Yeah. They did one in Zero G, which was pretty cool. I have a soft spot for being half drunk and watching OK Go music videos, which we didn't watch tonight. We watched The Rock. I have like nine pages of notes.
I think the takeaway so far, in however long we've been blabbering, is that we have really nothing bad to say, so we're just like going off on tangents, because it's not like we have anything. We're like, what are we complaining about here?
No, I mean, you're not wrong. So,
Nicolas Cage is total nonsense.
There's lots obviously. To be like, are you fucking serious about this movie? But yeah. I totally agree. The movie's
awesome.
There's
totally tons of little scenes where it's like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? And some writer is like, well, that doesn't make any sense in any form.
So this is a good segue.
It would look cool, man. It would look cool.
Are there action movies that are better than this? For me, I would argue really only Die Hard.
Wait.
And I would say that's arguable.
Die Hard, Terminator 2.
Ooh, Terminator Aliens. 2.
Yeah.
Aliens.
Well, I mean, still, that's a hell of a group to be included in.
Cocaine is one hell of a drug. Well, I mean,
it's up there. Apparently, this is, reading some trivia, this is Michael Bay's favorite movie of his. His favorite movie he's ever done. This is Sean Connery's favorite movie that he did in the 90s.
Wait, what else did
name
he do in the 90s?
Name some other stuff he did in the 90s.
You're the man now, dog.
I don't. Was that the 90s or the 2000s?
Just the fact that he looks back on this with pleasure. Because you don't know. He's there with Nicolas Cage, who's just making up shit the whole time. You could have been like, that was the worst experience.
How dare him? He was the voice of the dragon in Dragonheart. And that is a terrible movie.
He was in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. That was in the 90s, wasn't it?
That's actually true.
Last Crusade?
For a second, I thought you were talking about
that's Cage. True. Like,
oh, God. Oh, my God. If he had been...
God, that would be as insane as making Shia LaBeouf the next Indiana Jones. Like, who the fuck would do that?
They shot him out of a cannon and fired him into the sun. He's okay.
God, fuck that guy. Fuck the beef.
I mean, effectively, we're trying to characterize Nick Cage by the fact that his girlfriend is pregnant, played by that person faking an English accent from Mallrats. What's her name? Claire Forlani, you said it.
Yeah, that's Sean Connery.
No, that's Sean Connery's daughter.
Oh, Nick Cage's wife or fiance disappears forever other than he bangs her on the roof.
She's at the end crying.
You cannot tell me you don't want to bang her on the roof or anywhere else.
What city is that?
Wait.
We cut from San Francisco and then apparently they ended up on, like, I don't know, the Jersey Shore. It was like he lived underneath this? Six flags over Georgia.
I'm going with Chicago.
Chicago.
But there is that scene where they're banging on the roof and he gets a phone call and there's this, like, massive metal structure in the background.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, it's like they're in Coney Island.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, Coney Island.
And everyone wants to fucking Coney Island. That's just like a national
goal. Especially when you got Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
That's where the CIA released AIDS for the first time. The dog just stole my pizza. We're okay.
For some reason, this movie, like every 15 minutes, we just kept coming up with conspiracy theories. And to be fair, this movie's actually about conspiracy theories. Yeah. You really break it down what this movie's about, it's about conspiracy theories.
I mean, to be fair, at this point, the X-Files had already done a thing on POWs in which you looked him up. The main heavy who turns against Ed Harris, the black guy. Did you look up his name?
I did not look him up.
He's in an X-Files episode where he plays a Haitian that is giving nightmares to people because he was in a unit in Vietnam where the POWs weren't actually rescued, but they just said they were rescued. Like, it's a common theme. And that episode came out in 94.
Tony Todd, star of Candyman.
What a shit movie.
He was in Platoon.
The real Candyman is an actual horrifying
person.
That's
a pretty good movie.
Pretty sure he is the Candyman. Like, he's the star of Candyman.
Okay.
Creepy dude. Creepy dude.
And so we have
this guy.
Terrifying black guy.
Plays Captain Darrow. He's one of the mutineers.
The one the Rocket Man.
One of the he's the Rocket Man.
I don't like soft ass.
He doesn't like soft ass shit.
Oh, by the way, everyone that's listening, we had a drinking game during this game, which is that anything said that was incredibly dramatic, we drank.
Yeah, like overly dramatic.
Which, if you're not logical, you will literally die very quickly.
This movie is all about the extras who were given a line and an extreme close-up and told to just, like, scream it at the camera or ham it up.
You just fucked up your Ferrari.
So not mine. Let me catch up.
Okay, man, that was terrible laugh.
For some reason, Michael and I knew almost every line from this movie. Like, right before it was about to be said, we just, like, raise our glass. We're like, and we knew every line. Every, like, stupid little, had nothing to do with the plot. Just every little tiny thing.
We had quality major stuff.
Well, and yeah, you listeners out in TV land, Zach's on this a lot. And Zach often does the Zaction movies with me.
Zaction movies.
But, I mean, that's kind of what this was. Zach would be talking like he does on the podcast, where we'd just be talking about shit, and then we would shut each other up. I don't know. Scott and Michael just kind of knew this movie, so...
We knew every little tiny line, everything.
So let's catch up this plot a little bit. Ed Harris and his Marines, like his personal platoon, right, are on the tour of Alcatraz and wearing jackets and stuff, windbreakers like the tourists. They seize the tour after everyone is locked up in the prison cell, including locking up the ranger, at which point... Michael already said the line. The tour is over and they lock people up in the thing.
What kind of fucked up tour is this?
At that point, a bunch of helicopters show up, bringing another group of soldiers, which are mercenaries. These are the people who are going to end up being the tension.
Oh, yeah. Floppy hairdo.
Floppy. Well, and the black guy who's the head of them.
Yeah.
Rocket Man. Candyman. Like soft ass shit.
Effectively, he has a connection to look for other defectors, people who want it. Ed Harris thinks he has a mission, but he's insane. He's kind of 100% wrong, as he's proven to be, because even though he's not willing to kill people, he is literally 100% of the time. They keep reminding us that he's not only violating orders, but he's threatening the innocent lives of people who are hostages, because the only solution they make clear at the very beginning is to blow up the island to kill the hostages, which they're willing to do to save 10 million other lives.
And he's managed to recruit this crew of 15 people or whatever, 15 Marines. And the only way to recruit them is if they completely agree with this plan he's letting everyone think is actually going to happen, which is we have rockets. We are going to basically destroy San Francisco unless we get like $100 million. And which shouldn't have been that big a deal to the government. But regardless, so he's surrounded by people who are totally fine with murdering innocent people for money. Or just do it anyway. And then by the end, he's surprised that he's the only one who doesn't want to do that.
He thinks the government's going to give in and nobody's going to die.
Right.
Well, he
says, surrounded himself with people who want to do this.
Which is ironic, considering he was allegedly in Vietnam.
Which is ironic because people were dying in literally everything he's done. He's at this point completely off the rails. He's even name dropping secrets that the FBI director pretends like he doesn't know. It's all bullshit.
The Red Sea Trading Company?
Yeah.
Yep.
What is that? Identify yourself. FBI agent director Womack.
Womack.
Anyway,
Womack.
He presents himself like he's an interesting character, but it's definitely Michael Bay thinking he's being more interesting than he actually is. It's
who again was jerking off the entire time.
He was mad because this is where we get George Washington was a great man and a bunch of revolutionaries throughout the British and
they were called patriots.
It's bullshit. But the whole thing about it is Michael Bay thinks he's smarter than the audience.
Bay has a super PAC just to fund his porn collection.
Yeah, he does. It's super packed, filled with pornography.
Just work with it. It's worth noting.
Michael Bay super packed for porn.
It's worth noting. It's worth noting that
if there's any room, we'll super pack it.
That the rockets, the chemical, the VX gas, the so-called steel, is the same shit that the North Koreans used to kill Kim Jong-un.
Identify yourself.
3 months ago. Yeah. FBI director Scott Tu.
How do you know this information?
I read it on
Reddit.
On Reddit.
On Reddit, yes.
They thought they'd run a game show.
I got an email.
Kim Jong-un is like, shut the fuck up.
Oh, man. If the North Koreans hacked this podcast like they did the interview, just recorded that from my Jordan State podcast. Yeah. All right.
Bring it on, North Korea.
Ooh, that was my calendar reminder telling me to take my statin.
You fucking old man.
Share all right. Information to correct. The general public here. Moving on.
Well, to be fair, the person who may or may not edit this out is on the panel, so we'll figure that shit out.
Well, fuck that guy.
Yeah. At this point, are you smelling the microphone?
No. Does it smell like a beer?
At this point, we're made known in the war room that Ed Harris's character got the Congressional Medal of Jesus. And we kind of get introduced to Sean Connery's character as the only person who ever escaped from Alcatraz, right?
Wait. Many times we were told, you're on a need-to-know bit. We're on a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know before you actually get to know who this guy is.
It's okay, audience. English is his third language, and he'll figure it out eventually.
Yeah, hold it tape, motherfucker.
Kumite.
This isn't Bloodsport. Fuck Kumite.
All right, so go ahead, Michael. You're in the middle of a thought. Fuckhead.
No, it's passed.
No. Right.
My name is Scott.
They slowly reveal Sean Connery's character because at first you're supposed to be all like, who's this asshole, mysterious, sensual being with the beautiful mane of Irish, Scottish, whatever they're saying he's from, locks and
the British Isles. I don't even think they bothered to look where
escape,
he's from.
And they're like, I knew he would escape. And he's stealing a Humvee and having a crazy car chase. And but by the end, you know, they slowly reveal things. They're like, gosh, I really identify with him too. What is with all the bad guys who aren't bad guys in this movie?
Don't forget the room service.
Snacks. Drinks.
He's getting a haircut from the gayest person who's ever lived.
You the barber? No, the stylist.
My brother and I grew up on this movie too, and I have an older brother, and I texted him while we were watching this movie and said, you know, we're watching Rock, doing myopia. And his only response was, snacks? Question mark. We still say this to each other randomly. Usually has nothing to do with food. Just snacks. Drinks? This is how embedded this movie is in me and my brother's life.
He steal. So Sean Connery essentially escapes by stealing the wire you hang clothes up to dry out of the shower, wrapping it around the assistant director's neck, that one that essentially betrayed him and tore up his amnesty clause,
threw him
off the roof.
Arm.
Right. Around we didn't have a lynching. We didn't have a Scott lynching an American. We had a wrapping it around his arm, which we see in a cast later. It's the John Woo scene where the doves fly by as he's thrown off the balcony. And then we end up in a car chase. In which
100% agree. It's a John Woo scene.
It is. Because someone Tarantino'd the fuck and stole an Asian scene out of a movie. That's when Sean Connery steals the Humvee from another gay stereotype. And Nick Cage steals the Ferrari. Ferrari or Lambo? Ferrari. It had the, Ferrari.
You fucked up your Ferrari, man.
No. Because Sean Connery wants to see his daughter, who's played by Claire Forlani, because a 2,000-year-old Sean Connery had sex at one point and gave birth to an 18-year-old.
So it's unclear. It seems like he broke out of prison, like fell in love with a woman. They banged at least a couple times. I mean, it's Sean Connery. They banged probably millions of times.
Pushy galore.
And then went to like Woodstock and he got arrested at Woodstock or something like that. It seems like he was arrested in a concert.
It's like a Zeppelin concert or something.
Yeah, that's right. It was a Zeppelin concert. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, he said he's been in prison now for 30 years.
With two breakouts. She'd have to be. But that means he broke out at one point.
She'd have to be 30 or he'd have to have.
So this movie was made in 96 and Zeppelin didn't come out until 68 or 9.
Yeah, very end of the 60s.
So this must
have. If not, like, there
is. So that makes no sense.
The idea that Claire Forlani was playing 31. She can barely hold on to the English language for 6 seconds. She's not. I don't know.
She only had two lines.
Claire Forlani bothers me because she was in every movie in the 90s and she's not a very good actress. The second she stopped being attractive, they stopped hiring her, though. So
Nick.
It's true.
Oh, shit.
She wasn't even in the second Mallrats movie, which I made up in my head.
Okay.
She's no Tara, whatever her name is.
Tara Reid?
Yeah, she's no Tara Reid.
Oh, are you insinuating that Michael Bay would put a pretty woman who can't act in one of his movies? Is that what you're trying to say?
You mean one who called him a Nazi? Oh, she ended up back in the fourth Transformers.
I know. She's still pretty, though. So,
who are we talking about?
Megan Fox.
Yeah, Megan Fox called him a Nazi. Anyway, so long story short, Nick Cage covers for Sean Connery, so Sean Connery realizes he's kind of a good dude. So he agrees to help them, but no one really knows what's going on except for Nick Cage at this point. They discover that the weapons are hidden on one small corner of the mortuary in Alcatraz. So they decide that they're going to launch kind of a SEAL Team 6 style invasion of Alcatraz against this kind of heavily armed group that's already on the island.
And this SEAL team has no idea how to break down doors.
They have no idea. It becomes
evidently obvious when. What does Sean Connery have to do?
Well, there's a Super Mario Brothers level where he's going to go fight Bowser. He's timed it out perfectly where he rolls and rolls and rolls. I've seen him on Twitch doing this very same thing where he's beating the level on a speedrun.
Oh, yeah, speedrun, man.
Yeah, totally. That's spot on.
Speedrun, I mean, that's exactly what he is. He goes, get out of my way, fucker. I've played this before. And then he's timed it all the way out. I just hope they haven't changed the timing for the fucking tourist.
Wait, but what is he timing out? You gotta describe this. This scene is fucking ridiculous.
So, imagine Macaulay Culkin from Home Alone 8... The Oldening. There's a gap about the size of a coffin where he has to roll through that he's timed to make sure that Joe Pesci fucking dies this time. There's fires, there's gears, there's blades that come from the ceiling. It's literally something out of a ghost level in Mario Brothers.
It's like Indiana Jones.
I do traps. A lot of drugs and that made no sense.
It's like Indiana Jones traps. Yeah, for some reason
cocaine is one hell of a drug.
There's gears, there's fire bursts.
Yeah, why is this in a prison?
I don't know. Okay. But he gets to the other side to open the door so the SEALs can come in. But never mind, when he broke out, he had to roll out through this like thing of fire and shit. But the door was open. Why was the door open?
All he had to do was unlock the door.
God damn
it. Maybe he was bored.
He rolled out. Maybe he's on an ego trip. A rolling ring of fire.
I'm James Bond, motherfucker. I'm not going through the door. It's not some shit I would do.
Lame.
There's some fire. I'll just roll through that shit.
And then I started writing bullshit.
How do you know the timing? You can't even like, okay, anyway.
Well, and didn't you remember it from 30 years ago? Although to be, I was going to make a joke about things not remembering from 30 years ago, but I still remember the Konami code from like 25 years ago. So
can we talk about all the things in this movie, either physical or character-wise, that make no sense? Like the fact that there are mine carts on Alcatraz, like it's Donkey Kong. Like, what the fuck are they mining on Alcatraz, an island that's like 8 feet off the water?
Disappointment or hope. Like, you just take it from the prisoners and then use it to power.
Yeah, but they have a whole scene, this like epic shootout, which by the way is fucking awesome.
I mean, it's a pretty long track, and
yeah, it goes it's ridiculous.
Deep. Like, I mean, it opens up pretty deep.
And the one guy falls while being lit on fire by Connery, who, again, is fucking Connery.
That was Dr. Cox. Dr. Cox got his legs lit on fire. Yeah,
fuck that dude.
And then fell in the water, and instead of being like, oh, thank God, he died. He just died.
Well, and then the story's so long, you expect them to run into a Ninja Turtle, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. That's been good.
Like, they don't see the sunlight for the last 10 minutes of the movie.
That's what he gets for celebrating Michael Bolton's entire catalog. Fuck that guy. Fuck him.
Michael Bolton. Yeah. Oh, fuck.
So, yeah, it has what? John C. McGinley is one of the bad guys. You got Tuco Salamanca.
Oh, Tuco.
It's one of the bad guys. Yep. Who else? You got Ed Harris. You got that guy from The Negotiator.
Yep.
It has so many good, like, I want to say bit characters, but like,
yeah, it has
guys
like,
that are just like awesome actors.
It has like every actor that pops up in every movie like this in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's like every masterpiece BBC thing where they're like, all right, here's all the British actors. Use them.
And don't forget. Benedict Cumberbatch be anyone.
Don't forget, it's Michael Biehn, who I wish that guy did more shit.
Why isn't he in everything?
I can only think of like...
How come James Cameron was the only person who knew to put him in everything?
He was in Tombstone, this, and...
Terminator. The Abyss.
Was he in Terminator?
He was he's John Connor's dad.
He's Kyle.
Yeah.
He's in The Abyss with an epic mustache. He's the bad guy.
It's like a fucking boomerang.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Biehn. The dude. Well, he's in Aliens.
Oh, yeah.
He's the best.
But he never did anything after this.
He stayed frosty. Yeah, I mean, besides James Cameron and The Rock, I mean, yeah, I don't know what else. It's sad. It's real sad. He's probably sitting around right now listening to this, just being like, I know, right?
He didn't make it very long in this movie either.
He died in an epic shower shootout.
Yeah.
Which was not sexual at all.
So, Scott, as our social networking person, I'm going to tag him on this, and you need to send it out on Twitter. If he tweets back, you officially get to name an entire month next season.
Michael Biehn.
I mean,
he'll tweet me and be like, "You're pronouncing my last name wrong."
Fuck.
You better not be the guy who keeps saying my name in this podcast. So, Mikey, I hope Mikey likes it. He likes it. So, we should describe a little bit more of this Alcatraz level. It looks like Arkham Asylum, for Christ's sake. There's like broken bridges and stairways that have dissolved.
Yeah, it's all pretty pretty ridiculous down there. There's a lot going on underneath the prison in Alcatraz. I mean, there's like a whole world of nonsense.
The shootout is absolutely ridiculous. They're found out by these little homemade motion sensors that are basically just light bulbs. I mean, they're just clearly light bulbs. That's it. With like a little thing wiggling.
Hey, they worked.
Yeah.
They did their job.
I guess so. And then they come out of the shower and they're just surrounded. And Michael Biehn's like, no, fuck you. I'm going to fucking die.
And Ed Harris is like, stand down, motherfucker.
Yeah. The whole thing makes no sense.
That's an awesome scene, though.
It's an awesome scene.
That scene goes from, like, they're sneaking in and it's real quiet to, like, boom, Marines up ahead. And they're like, oh, shit. They're like,
I gotta say, Michael Bay is a master of making you forget that plot is kind of the reason you go to a film.
Yeah, well, actually, it's like
the perfect, just like, oh.
Perfect marriage of people screaming a little bit louder and louder each time. The music is building. It cuts like crazy, just like cut, like every little guy is like, oh my God, what's happening? And it's just really fast. And then suddenly once the shooting begins, it's like, oh,
Well, actually, I would argue with you for this one scene, because this is the only scene that I think actually matters in the movie.
Mm. No, it's a big turning point in the movie.
Well, right, because like,
because we spent an hour building to this.
Because Nick Cage is here to disarm a bomb. That's all he is. He's here to literally save lives. Ed Harris is thinking he's doing something noble, right? But you have two groups of Marines here that are literally thinking they're doing the right thing. And you have that argument, right? Where the group that is led, that Nick Cage is in, saying, look, you promised to defend Americans against threats, both foreign and domestic. And Ed Harris thinks he has a point to make. But his men opened fire to kill not only other Marines, but literally he's saying that American lives don't matter. This is when Ed Harris becomes the bad guy, and he realizes it halfway through they're killing Nick Cage's allies, right? Because it's not until the first 10 people die that he starts saying, stop firing. And at that point, he becomes a villain that is irredeemable. Oh, no,
that's not true. Right when they start firing,
he says,
cease fire.
He's sitting there covering ears, leaning up against the brick like that's fucking pussy.
Nobody can hear him.
That's right, because they're all firing. Yeah.
He's not
no.
And he's not doing the hand signals.
You know? No, they have headpieces.
Pretty basic.
They have earpieces in the whole time. So this means that they're not listening to him, which means he hired either insane people to kill people, or they're just ignoring him outright, which eventually happens. There's a mutiny. Yeah. But one way or another, he's hired the wrong people. Like,
exactly.
He's not hiring people to make a point. He's hiring people who want to kill people, which makes him wrong.
And they cut to a couple of the mercenaries in that scene, like, let's waste these fuckers. Like they're ready. Yeah, they're ready to kill
people. Creepy white captain takes way too much pleasure in capping the left, dude.
And so does the guy
right in the head. Yeah, Candyman.
It's like, yeah, right between the
eyes. Candyman doesn't blink this whole movie either. He's just like, he looks like a Bond villain. He really does. He looks like Baron Samedi, right? Like unblinking, just like stealing souls with his breath nose.
But they get theirs in the end, which I do like this about this movie, that their deaths are gratuitous. Candyman and Floppy Hair Guy.
How did they die again? Wait, on the
same Candyman ends up impaled on a pole.
Candyman's a Rocket Man.
Wait, is Candyman the black guy or the white guy?
Black guy.
Okay. From Candyman.
Yeah, and Floppy Hair ends up eating the nerve gas.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was hot.
Yeah, they died hard.
Yeah, just like Kim Jong-un's brother.
Ed Harris. Nick Cage doesn't try to save him, but he pulls him off the battlefield like a soldier would.
Yep.
Can we just talk about how Nick Cage kills Candyman? Or not Candyman?
Let's get an in-depth analysis from our music guru.
Let's catch up a little bit. So they're running through the sewers. At this point, Nick Cage and Sean Connery are on their own because everyone else in his platoon dies in the shower. They're running through. Ed Harris realizes that someone's alive because they hear them arguing very loudly. And so they start essentially dropping death charges like it's clear and present danger or something down into the sewers. And it allows us to kind of get into this little mind space where Nick Cage finally realizes he's on his own and tells Sean Connery that, look, they have nerve gas and it's not just about us seizing the island or freeing hostages. They're threatening to kill millions of people. This is where Sean Connery, in character terms, is redeemed. This is his kind of save the cat moment.
I agree with everything about that except for the concept that Michael Bay would use anything so fancy as mind space. Just throwing that out there. We're talking about Michael Bay here.
Sounds like a title of a good Michael Bay movie, though.
I don't think at this point he had that much power.
I'll give you that. Totally.
Well, Michael Bay doesn't write these things, you know.
No, but I think at this point he has someone else writing for him. But after this movie, which was huge, I think he just can be like, and then oil drillers are going to land on an asteroid and save the fucking day.
Yeah.
America for spacious skies.
South Park spoofs him perfectly.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You have explosions, and then this guy dies, and there's an explosion over here, explosion over there. It's kind of like the virus. Sir, those are special effects. Those aren't plot points.
Now that you're deaf, we'll just talk about whatever we want.
This has been brought to you by...
Shut up, Brother Scott.
Guard your ears!
You're a beautiful person, both of you. Look at you from angles.
Right. Yes. Anyway. So Sean Connery finally has a reason to actually help out. And you're like, why did Womack keep this from him all along if this was like the reason why he would help them to begin with?
Womack.
Conspiracies.
Well, it's just
aliens.
It's the difference between humanity and government, right? Like eventually someone reaches out to him. Like, the FBI guys are just as slimy as anyone else in this movie, mm-hmm. but there's this urge.
The San Fran director with that fucking mustache?
Well, you can tell
that they get that guy.
He should have been stroking a cat, for Christ's sake. He's a goddamn asshole. Regardless, we end up in a kind of an action montage, so we can talk about whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it starts becoming a, you know, one set piece to the next, and, you know, like the minecart shootout, and then the mutiny shootout and Mexican standoff scene that's, like, lifted out of Crimson Tide, just like the music is all lifted out of Crimson Tide.
Well, you guys watched more bullshit films like this than I did at the time. Is there any... Is this the first movie where Nick Cage is the action hero? Because Nick Cage is phenomenal.
Face Off is after this.
Con Air is after this. Yeah,
it is. After this.
Because, like, my thought is, like, this is literally what...
I feel like there's one thing he did before this. But.
Well, because a lot of what he did before is a lot slower, a lot more acting. This is more like him being a badass. And it just, it reminds me of what Jeff Goldblum was.
He also did 8mm after this.
Well, right.
It's a movie about snuff films. Think about that.
What was the Robin Williams film where he was just creeping on people's photos?
One hour photo.
Yeah, 1 hour photo. That was.
But I mean, like,
I mean, before this, to answer your question, before this, he had just won an Oscar for Leaving Las Vegas. To, you know, he probably was already filmed The Rock by then. He did Kiss of Death, where he's a little nutty. Then he did some comedies, Trapped in Paradise, It Could Happen to You, Guarding Tess, Amos and Andrew, Honeymoon in Vegas. These are all like comedy movies.
But it just made me think, like...
So he had done smaller comedies, Raising Arizona, Moonstruck, and hadn't done an action movie yet. And if you didn't know that, you know, being a 30-year-old, 25-year-old listening to this, Nicolas Cage was not an action star until this happened. Mm-hmm. He had won an Oscar. He was in comedies. He was not cast as this. But you look at this. He does The Rock, then Con Air, Face Off. He has a little bit of a break here, but yeah, 8mm. Gone in 60 Seconds.
Gone in 60 Seconds was on our list, man.
Was the car's name Eleanor?
The Shelby Cobra specifically was Eleanor.
Yeah.
Oh, that movie.
There was a guy in my fucking high school who drove one of those.
A Shelby Cobra, like an old 60s one?
The same Shelby Cobra. I know, right?
Whoa.
Fuck Walton.
Yeah, right. But I mean, like, my point being, like, fucking Jeff honkies. Goldblum in Jurassic Park was like the wounded scientist guy. He was Nick Cage's character here. And then 96 was Independence Day. Nick Cage kind of stole his career because he could have been the same action hero. He just never did it again.
Are you equating Nick Cage to Jeff Goldblum?
Based on the earlier career? Absolutely.
Because I'm just thinking about that scene from Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park was before 93. This.
Yeah,
okay. I'm just thinking about the scene in Jurassic Park where Jeff Goldblum is just like laying sideways.
Yeah.
You know, fucking with a shirt sexy off, as hell. Just like leaning on it, and literally all he says is chaos.
Yeah.
And he's just like showing his like white, sweet, hot Jewish chest. Well, I can't see Nick Cage doing that. Like everything Nick about Nick Cage
shirtless playing a guitar in this movie.
Yes, he would be playing a guitar.
To be fair, it almost happens in this movie.
And when he runs into the toilet, he would definitely get eaten.
No, I mean, I was thinking of also in Independence Day when they're at the end smoking cigars against Will Smith. Like, that's fucking a sexy scene.
That's a sexy scene.
But I mean, I'm just saying, like, he could have been this action.
Will, if you're listening, I will smoke a cigar with you. This is Mike Lovecott.
I will smoke a cigar with you, and you can pause whenever you want to in the middle of our conversation. But it's just not going to happen. Nick Cage, you can smoke both cigars simultaneously while I want a cigar in your castles, all nine of them.
I bet Nicolas Cage listens to this podcast.
I tag him every time, but he thinks I'm just tagging myself and it's awkward.
Big see you out there?
You know, he's sitting there right now. He's like, why don't you guys do Snake Eyes? You guys
he
remember that movie?
He has a special pyramid grave in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Yeah.
What the fuck does that mean?
It's a giant pyramid in one of New Orleans' like oldest cemeteries. You go on a cemetery tour and there's a giant pyramid built for Nicolas Cage whenever he dies.
He also owns the house of a famous serial killer in New Orleans.
And a shitload of Elvis
the house
stuff.
Of the rising sun. Because that would make a lot of sense. Him or Hugh Grant. Because, I mean, that's
how he pays for this.
That dude just loves hookers.
This is why he makes everything that's offered to him. Because he has shit he needs to pay for.
Do you ever think that Eddie Murphy almost picked up Hugh Grant because he thought he was a lady prostitute? Happened in the 90s.
God, what happened to
that? What would you name that movie?
He used to have a career. And then he got nominated for Academy Award and he killed his career again. Don't worry, he'll make another movie where he's eight fat people again. But we should wrap this up a little bit.
Yeah, I guess we should.
Eventually,
places.
They've disconnected all the nuclear or all the nuclear weapons, all the chemical weapons,
except whatever. For go two, with it. Kim Jong Un,
Durga Muhammad Jihad. We're talking about Team America World Police,
right? Uncle, bro.
All right,
America.
But regardless, they're down to two weapons left where he has to take out the. Essentially, what he's doing is rather than disconnecting the weapons or getting rid of the chemicals, he's just taking out the chip that navigates
the guidance chip.
Thank you.
Which, by the way, we only realized this watch that the way he takes out the chips is completely unnecessary. So he removes the chemical from this tube and then turns the tube upside down to remove the chip. Which makes it pretty obvious that he could just pick the whole thing up and pull it out from the bottom without removing any of this and exposing himself to any of the risk he does. But he's Nick Cage, so what the fuck? Why not?
I will say, though, if it's an actor's choice, it's a brilliant actor's choice.
Yeah, but they could have made it a little less obvious that it made no sense.
No. But the thing is, Sean Connery is the badass who's gotten him to this point so far. So then he holds him literally a tower of death and says, now don't move. I'm the only one who can save your life right now. That's kind of a badass move, right?
That is when he starts getting a bit of his swagger back. That's the fuck the prom queen part. He's like, oh, I've got my own skills, motherfucker.
I mean, and again, I don't know who wrote that in or who changed that, but that's literally where in the movie Nick Cage, pulls the underwear out of his ass and kind of becomes like a badass from a nerd. That's also when he can finally shoot a gun and not miss wildly, you know. He becomes competent, which is kind of a cool scene. Regardless, at this point, he goes into the mortuary. He disconnects all the bombs. And after a few scuffles, he's killed all the bad guys except for it's like 2-on-2. It's the final boss level of any video game ever. He finds out that there's two missiles left. One is in the lighthouse. And just as he's done disconnecting it, there's a final shootout where... As Aaron said, the creepy cokehead, the unblinking evil guy who ruins the movie.
The black captain.
No, the other one.
The white guy.
The white guy with the floppy hair.
No, in the lower lighthouse is the black guy.
Right, but the two of them turn on Ed Harris.
Ah, yes, just before this. This is true.
And there's a shootout scene in which Ed Harris is shot and he tells Nick Cage where the final missile is.
What have I done? As he slides to the right.
Because Ed Harris finally realizes in a Shakespearean moment, which he literally stole out of something that I'm sure was a better movie.
Like Shakespeare.
Do you think Ed Harris knew what this movie was?
No.
Do you think they filmed all his scenes in 3 days?
And I don't
they
think were anyone knew what this movie was.
They were like, we know exactly what this character is. We'll figure out the rest of the movie later. But you're going to kill this Ed. And he's like, oh, I'm going to get another Oscar nomination for this.
This was 96. Everyone was on coke.
And he crushes it. And they're like, okay, we got to write
this. You have a very different memory of the 90s than I do.
Dude, we were 11. Please. You were on lots of coke. It was called... Adderall all the time.
I wasn't on Ritalin. You were on all the Adderall. I wasn't on Adderall too.
I did a lot of that. Hell is yeah. Still do. Big fan.
Yeah, right. But what I was going to say was,
as a potential role model, I endorse that shit.
I fully believe that Ed Harris was a character actor who done good, right? He's a Stephen Tobolowsky type where he filled a role, played it perfectly well. He was the insurance salesman in Groundhog Day and literally 200 other things.
Ned Frierson?
Yeah.
How do you know his name off the top of your head?
He has an incredible podcast on movies. And Steven, if you're listening, be on the podcast because he does podcasts occasionally and he's a good dude.
Well, that's awesome.
But what I was saying was good character actors in the 90s, that's literally what they did. They were on stage or on scene for 2 weeks and made this movie. And I perfectly believe Ed Harris did this while he was filming, Apollo 13. And just in the 90s, he was everywhere because he was just awesome.
Ed Harris elevates this movie. If you don't have Ed Harris or Sean Connery, if you didn't get one of those, it's just Nicolas Cage just ad-libbing and being an
this
idiot.
This is every
for
other
hours.
Nicolas Cage
wouldn't
movie.
Work at all.
Yeah. If you don't
it's Tommy without Keith all. Moon.
Well, I mean, it's the reason why Armageddon gets made. It's true. Because Armageddon is all younger actors.
And that movie sucks.
I like Armageddon.
No, you don't.
It's terrible.
It's fucking terrible.
We did it for the podcast.
It's fucking terrible. Yeah. It's fucking terrible. It's offensively bad.
But you're right. Without Bruce Willis.
I mean, the fact that they have a Criterion collection, like, what were they thinking? Those guys did Seven Samurai. Why are they doing Armageddon? Just throwing that out there. Criterion, not
because they did The Rock.
What the fuck were you thinking?
Michael Bay
I'm
made
sure
a deal.
It was a contractual obligation.
You get to do two of my movies.
Oh, no, I was
and he hadn't
more,
made Bad Boys 2 yet.
What's the big black guy who was the Kingpin in Daredevil movie?
Michael Clark Duncan.
Because he was in R.I.P. that opposite. Yeah, he's dead, which is a shame. Steve Buscemi's in that movie. You have.
What are we talking about now?
Yeah, we're talking about Armageddon now.
I'm just talking
Michael
about.
Clark Duncan's in there?
Yeah.
It's got a lot of people in that
It's
movie.
Got an incredible cast.
Regardless, it's terrible. No, it's terrible. Yeah. Back to The Rock.
Yeah.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, dude. Aerosmith there?
Aerosmith's
not
in
it. Oh, wait. No, the music. They did the song for the movie. But plus, his daughter's in there. Fuck her.
She was in Lord of the Rings.
It doesn't redeem her from doing.
She's on The Leftovers. She's all actually right, really good.
Okay,
No, I was bringing it up for a reason. I was bringing it up because it allows him to bring in smaller actors, other than
like physical stature or fame.
You didn't even let me finish this thought after we said we were wrapping it up, man.
I didn't hear you say that. You need to talk louder.
So Bruce Willis
says Scott.
I think this podcast already ended.
Anyway. Is anyone still out there? Hello?
I'm going to shut you off.
It's not going to matter. We got other mics.
Yeah, we have other mics. He's loud enough. But regardless, this is an interesting Michael Bay piece because before this he had done, well, other than a movie that you went into the sequel of, Bad Boys and Bad Boys 2. Mm. Bad Boys 2 is unwatchable.
What had he done before this? Other than Bad Boys.
You ain't seen Bad Boys 2. He did Bad Boys before this and he did music videos.
Yeah, this is like his third movie, second movie.
As if you can't tell, he came from music videos.
Well, and then Armageddon was also nominated for a bunch of stuff. I think cinematography and special effects. So, when we did Armageddon, this is our second Michael Bay movie. I think everyone agreed everyone should watch Armageddon again, except for none of you were on that panel, so you're all wrong.
No, yeah, seriously.
Yeah, we all avoided that one.
Whoever said Armageddon was defensible should get their dick ripped off.
So, Scott, how do you feel when he says
Scott 1 agrees. Scott 1?
This has turned violent and gone totally off the rails.
Scott here.
Stop using my name.
I'm just the smallest little orphan, Scott. I just can't imagine anything going wrong.
You stop that.
Anyway, so before we go on any further, because we're out of time.
Oh, spoiler, Nick Cage wins, and then we've... quasi find out who shot JFK. I mean, that whole scene is like that's right.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, Nick Cage has just injected himself in the heart because someone saw Pulp Fiction, and when you see Pulp Fiction,
while being Jesus with green flares, we've got green smoke. We've got green smoke.
Just startled the dog.
Yeah, that's pretty. Some good shots.
That's pretty much it.
Some good shots there, though.
They pull off at the last moment. There's an explosion, and the explosion ends up attacking Nick Cage. Nick Cage ends up being wounded. He ends up flying across the wall into the water. When that happens, unfortunately, the movie... Well, actually, I'll give him credit here. The movie ends in about 4 seconds after...
Yeah, there's two scenes after that.
We have a weird kind of quick cut where Nick Cage is talking to Sean Connery. He says, look, this is all I wanted, you know, that he tried to rip you off, and he goes, I'm just going to disappear, and Nick Cage decides to let him disappear.
Yep. He covers for him, tells him where the gear is to get out, you know, in the bay, and the FBI, local FBI guy covers for him too. Sean Connery disappears, tells Nicolas Cage to go to Fort Walton, Kansas.
Yeah. I'm glad you remember that because I didn't even write that down.
I thought it was Oklahoma.
Where it cuts to the next scene and he stole a leg out of a pew in a church in the middle of nowhere.
God, it's a scene out of like a Chainsaw Massacre movie.
It's very goofy.
Well, what really bothered me about that scene actually was because what's his face? Sean Connery tells him to go to Kansas. He tells him to go there.
Yeah.
But he does, and then he leaves. But he doesn't tell him to go to a church. He doesn't tell him to pull the pew off.
When? slip of paper.
He gives him a, and it says,
why does he have a slip of paper with the address on it? When did he have time to do that?
He wrote it out.
He found a pen somewhere.
And it was on waterproof paper. With waterproof ink. Yeah, it makes no sense. Everything in his movie makes no sense.
He gives him a little wink and gives Nick Cage his phone number.
To watch this movie and really enjoy it, you have to be able to dispel your sense of disbelief. But luckily enough, the movie does it for you because it's just fucking awesome.
No, I'll tell you what. This is why you guys are wrong about Armageddon.
Dude, Armageddon sucks.
No, the thing is...
No, it sucks.
Michael, you turned your microphone. No, I was going to say that the thing about it is it goes so fast. This movie is bullshit and stupid, but it goes so fast you ignore it regardless.
Nick, you were saying about how Armageddon was good for some reason?
No, I was just saying it does the same thing. It moves so quickly you don't care about the science or the plot or the movement. It just happens.
I mean, the same is true of Judge Dredd, and that movie fucking sucked.
But it's a perfectly defendable movie because it's fun as shit. Except for Paul Schneider.
I am the law.
Good night, all.
So, without further ado, we are out of time. Do you guys have final thoughts? Michael, what's your thought?
This movie is amazing. It does an incredible job of dispelling disbelief. The physics make no sense. It is nonstop action. Even the scenes that are absolutely ridiculous are funny as shit. And even if they don't like move along the plot or the story or whatever, they're entertaining as hell. I think that's really what it boils down to. Is this movie is entertaining as hell constantly. And it's really easy, even if you're a critical watcher, to watch this and just be like, this is awesome. Because it is awesome. I would say there's maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 movies that are arguably better in the action realm than this. And I would add like
Commando.
Well, Commando's pretty awesome, but no. I would say like Die Hard, Terminator 2.
Roadhouse.
Oh, well, yeah, Roadhouse better than everything. I mean, that goes without saying.
Bloodsport.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat.
Ghost. Dirty Dancing. Really all the Swayze movies. And I mean in with that.
I was going to say anyone else have final words, but that might be the perfect one. No, I'm kidding. Aaron, what do you got?
It's just an incredibly watchable film. You can watch it, turn your brain off. It's entertaining. It's a good way to spend a couple of hours. I really liked it. I'd watch it again.
Thank you. Scotty boy.
I think it's a good example of how good Michael Bay can be at doing his thing. It takes itself really seriously, but with like constantly winking at you. But then when you watch like a Transformers or from what I remember, I mean, Armageddon makes a lot of humor. So, but from like the Transformers and stuff, he takes himself very seriously all of a sudden and makes these 2.5 hour long movies that just plod along. And this one moves really fast. It kind of makes fun of itself and just has a lot of fun. It's just basically like, here, we're going to have fun for 2 hours. And that's all. And it still holds up for me. And I've always liked this movie. And it's one of my favorite action movies for sure.
Excellent. My final thought is, apparently the most powerful person in Hollywood in the 90s was a man named Don Simpson, who I don't know.
Big D.
But the thing is, after this, I think Armageddon is a movie that comes out next. But Armageddon is a little bit more unhinged, a little bit crazier. Apparently...
Much worse.
Don... Thank you, Michael. It's like kicking a kid in the balls after he's already fallen over.
You gotta know, man.
But the thing is, Jerry Bruckheimer apparently produced this. He produced everything else. BJ. He produced the biggest pile of cocaine since Scarface. But he... Apparently, Don Simpson, his partner, was able to ring in everyone... Ring in Nick Cage, ring in Michael Bay. And this movie is probably the best Michael Bay has done. And since then, everyone has just taken the cocaine without him. And it's just all crazy and all gritted teeth and all cleavage. And that's why I think this movie and maybe people like Armageddon, because it's the last bastion of Michael Bay's hope for humanity. Because after that, it's just all tits in America, which is kind of like being in the South anyway.
I would argue that no one likes Armageddon. God. But that's just me.
Just stop.
You do realize that... Whatever.
That'll get edited out.
It's all being... Whatever. So, point being... is that this movie functions because people were able to hold back louder voices.
Yes.
That's why this is a good movie. Because other than this, the action movie genre of the 90s is irredeemable. Because the movies you guys are mentioning are all 80s movies that happened before this. This movie is way too late for that, and that makes this kind of the last bastion of a... This is the apex of a genre that then completely gets destroyed.
I'm just going to throw this out there. Two words. True Lies.
True Lies is before
Came out
this.
Before this.
Anything else?
Did it? Terminator 2.
Terminator 2 came out before this?
Well, Terminator 2 did. True Lies is...
95. It's like this 94. Is 2 years before yeah. this.
Speed came out before this. This is like one of the last. Because then Nicolas Cage started doing all the action movies. And, you know,
he kind of sucks on
that. After this, like, 98 is Armageddon, is Godzilla. It's all the movies that destroy the genre.
Started bringing back disaster as action movies.
Gone in 60 Seconds. They start remaking stuff. Like, this is literally the apex of original action movies.
Godzilla had that big remake with, like, it was a remake of a Led Zeppelin song with, I think, Puff Daddy.
Sean Combs.
We should have known that. Known the world.
Come with me. Soundtrack was bigger than the movie.
Yeah, it totally was. And that was like a kind of cool song.
I guess stay tuned, guys, because that movie's coming out later this year. Regardless, with that, we're out of time. So tune in next week and every future week when we put another bit of your past on trial. Next week is a Myopia Afternoons episode. And so Scott is on panel for that. And he is not going to give it away, of course, but we'll give you a hint. Before you listen to next week's episode, I'd say you order up a little bit of pizza. So tune in next week. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a production of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is produced by Nick Hoffman. Our editors are Aaron Greer, Candace Burns, and Nick Hoffman. Our theme song is Caroline, performed by the Serenaders. Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network. Find us on Facebook and DudeLetter.com.